I'd like to call the meeting to order of the Senate Special Committee on Trans-Alaska Pipeline System Throughput. Let us reflect that it is 15:37 on Thursday, February 7, 2013. We're in the Butchervich Room 205. Let the record show we have a quorum to do business. Present are Co-Chair Dunleavy, Senator McGuire, Senator Fairclough, Senator Gardner, and myself, Chairman Machicki. Also like to note the presence of Senator Giesel. Thanks for being here, Senator. And
Senator French.
Thanks for being here as well. I'd like to recognize our committee staff, Nancy Jones from Senate Records, and LIO staff, Sam Greeley. I'd like to also remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones, and I hope mine is off as well. Purpose of our meeting today is Senate Bill 21, Oil and Gas Production Tax. We have version A before us. We'll also be offering a letter of intent, which I will address after discussion of the bill. And right now, I'd like to, if there are any amendments, I'd like to remind folks that amendments we are addressing should be germane to the guiding tenets we've used in this committee and that they are specific to TAP's throughput. And at this time, are there any amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I move amendment number one.
Object.
Senator Fairclough, proceed.
Thank you. I understand that this is a courtesy we're going through and that it is the intention of the chair to move through the letter of intent and that my concerns, many of my concerns are addressed in that letter of intent, and I very much appreciate that, but I still think it's important for us as a committee to talk specifically on the record about the areas where we see individually, if not as a group, that this bill could be made better and more effective for our ultimate goal, which the entire bill is.
Senator Gardner, it's my first time with amendments and all of that.
Okay.
And I forgot to ask if you would like to speak to your objection.
Mr. Chairman, I'm objecting for discussions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So the purpose of amendment number one is the intent of the existing credits that we have under ACES is to boost production, create jobs, help fill the pipeline by rewarding investment in Alaska. And I believe that the governor's proposal removes that incentive, paving the way for investment elsewhere. It rolls back taxes and lets it go wherever the profits, wherever the companies want to take them. And as support for my amendment, I have the answer to some of the questions that I posed to the Department of Revenue and Econ 1, and they're being copied? They're being copied. I just realized this afternoon that they come into my mailbox this afternoon, too, so I'm a little unorganized. But basically, there is data in there I'll draw your attention to in just a moment. And I'd just like to say, in the meantime, the progressive net profits tax encourages reinvestment, eliminating progressivity in the 20% capital credit creates a double whammy. Under the progressive net profits tax with capital credits, the more you invest, if you're a taxpayer, particularly when prices are high, the less you pay in taxes. It draws it down all the way, and I think we make a mistake to eliminate progressivity and the capital credits. And if you, we'll have those copies in just a second. Okay, well, if I might just read for folks, now my original's gone, to the copy. Basically, I'm trying to show how capital credits incentivize capital investment in the state of Alaska. The state participates in that, and it also draws down, thank you, the tax, and I would refer, and this is a big document, and frankly, I haven't had time to study all of it, but if you'll look at page 3, item 6. No, I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm wrong there. I'm sorry. The reference isn't for this amendment. It's for another one.
So. Senator, do you need a few moments? We can take a brief at ease if that
Thank
would
you very much. No, we'll go ahead. I know what the writing on the wall is, and I don't want to take people's time. I just want to make the point that tax credits that we currently have are an important part of the system, and I think we make a mistake to eliminate them. There's a lot of ways to talk about them, but I would like to see them stay.
Okay. Can I ask the administration to join us and at least explain your logic behind eliminating credits? If you can state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I am the advisor for Petroleum Fiscal Systems to the Department of Revenue. The governor's legislation is built around the four core principles. First, fair to Alaskans. Second, that it encourages new production. Third, that it's simple and restores balance to the system. And fourth, that it's durable for the long term. The decision vis-a-vis the qualified capital expenditure credit, which, to be clear, is the credit that is being eliminated north of 68 degrees in the bill, is to balance the exposure the state has through several systems of growth. Typically in low prices and low price environments, as we see in the fiscal note, as prices drop, the revenues the state receives go down. At the same time, the level of credit exposure is based purely on the capital spending of a company. And the balance between those two fall out of balance for the state and in the fairness to Alaskans. And the best example of the way the relationship of that works, Mr. Chairman, is on page 3 of the fiscal note, looking at the relationship between the revenues that come in and the credits that come out. And the public will remember that line 1, talking about the revenue impacts of the elimination of the production tax, is subsequently balanced by the limitation of the credits for qualified capital expenditures. As the commissioners described to the committee further, the qualified capital expenditure credit is purely based on capital spending. And in that, there was no ability to tie it directly to new production. Certainly, spending and production are related. But in that spending is directly related to production, there was concern in the administration that the balance of that blanket credit based on capital spending wasn't directly tied enough to the incentive and the goal of this committee, which is to encourage new production.
Thank you, Mr. Pawlowski. Any questions for Mr. Pawlowski or statements by committee members on the amendment? Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just go on record that it's a complicated amendment, and it's a complicated conversation about progressivity and the interaction between the credits that are proposed in the governor's bill. And I have already been on the record saying that I am very interested in how and what happens at the intersection between realigning the credit structure and progressivity, and that is still a consideration for me. But I'm trying to go through to see what you're actually leaving in the bill and whether the amendment that is trying to leave something in the bill, and I really can't determine at this point what that is. So I appreciate the concept of progressivity being still on the table. I appreciate the concept, but I'll be voting against the amendment until I see the total interaction of what you're proposing to do.
Senator,
run in numbers.
If I may, I believe this amendment is specifically credit related, and I think we have a later amendment
on progressivity.
If it's made on progressivity.
Exactly, and if I might, Mr. Chair, what this amendment seeks to do is simply eliminate those portions of the governor's bill that delete the capital credits and restore to the current capital credits.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd have to say, I think when we use those glasses of throughput, we did include in the letter of intent that we would evaluate. We're asking the next committees to evaluate specific production-related credits allowed under ACES for inclusion in SB 21 as a direct incentive for costs that deliver production. Require that credits are charged against actual production to eliminate currently existing negative revenue liability to the state. Mr. Pawlowski.
Mr. Chairman, as I'm digesting this amendment, your point brings up an important point as well. The governor's bill seeks to eliminate the qualified capital expenditure credit, but maintain the 25% loss carryforward credit. However, the treatment of the loss carryforward credit is changed in the governor's bill so that that credit is truly taken against production revenue, so that when there is revenue, there's an ability to pay for the credit. Looking at this amendment on page 2, lines 17 through 19, the treatment of section 23 would upend that relationship of tying the credits to specifically when there is production tax revenue to pay for them, in addition to the qualified capital expenditure credit.
Thank you. Any other comments? And I just wanted to point out that I believe there are members that share wanting to investigate those credits going forward, and I believe that, well, I know that that will occur in resources on in both bodies. If there are no other comments, Senator Fairclough, is your objection maintained?
It is.
Nancy, could you please call the roll?
No.
Senator McGuire?
No.
Senator Gardner?
Yes.
Senator Dunleavy?
No.
No.
Four nays, one nay.
Amendment number one fails on a vote of one yay and four nays. Is there another amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number two.
Jack?
Would you like to speak to your objection, Senator Fairclough?
Purposes of discussion.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank
Senator
you.
Gardner.
Mr. Chair, I absolutely support having a lower tax rate to encourage new fields and new production, to incentivize it, and to help smaller companies in particular get off the ground, overcome the challenges of going from development directly into production. But I don't think that it needs to apply for the entire lifetime of a field. I think it should apply for long enough for people to recover their investments and then begin to see the light. And so I'm proposing a 7-year timeline for the 20% exclusion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Michael Pulowski again with the Department of Revenue. The evolution of this provision is really a good indication of the joint work between the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Revenue. And I'd ask that Deputy Commissioner Balash address the reason for the long duration, permanent duration in the gross revenue exclusion.
Deputy Commissioner Balash.
Thank you. For the record, Joe Balash, Deputy Commissioner at DNR. When we were examining the feasibility of relying on the GRE as a mechanism to incentivize new oil production, we looked at a variety of circumstances in the last decade of when new fields have come online and what the pace of development has really looked like. And what we find is that for a new field like Aguruk, for example, or Nikayachuk, that the drilling begins and we see a very small initial amount of production that comes in the first year, and that rate of production increases each of the first couple of years until you reach that peak point. And what's going on is more and more wells are being drilled and brought into production over the course of many months, if not years. And so a concern that we would have with this amendment is that 7 years would cut off the impact and value of the GRE too early in the life of some of those wells and affect the overall economics of the project in question. One of the things that we looked long and hard at in our evaluation and development of the legislation was life cycle economics, looking at long-term incentives and the trade-offs between tax credits, tax rates, and the GRE. And we really, at the end of the day, came to the conclusion that there's so much variability in the way fields are developed that having an artificial cutoff for the GRE would affect decision making in a way that, you know, fundamentally was not healthy.
Comments? Questions? Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, to the sponsor, is there a reason that 7 was selected versus a longer time period? Did you have reasoning behind the 7 years?
Thank you, Matt. Yes, the reasoning is modeled after the Middle Earth provisions with 7 years.
Other questions or comments? I want to point out again that we have, and we'll cover the letter in a little bit, but one of the things that were important to us, because the individual effort is important, I think every member of this committee is representing Alaskans. And we did carry the recommendation on the letter for consideration of Senate resources, and it states evaluate a time limit into the future for the 20% gross revenue exclusion. Didn't put a specific time because we're asking that it's considered with the best number possible if they are going to take that recommendation seriously.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? Nancy, please call the record for the roll.
Senator McGuire?
No.
Senator Gardner?
Yes.
Senator Barakoff?
No.
Co-Chair
Micheki? No.
Co-Chair Dunleavy?
No.
One yea, four nays.
Amendment number 2 fails on a vote of one yea and four nays. Are there other amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move amendment number 3.
Thank you, Senator Gardner.
Object.
Thank you, Senator Fairclough.
Purpose of discussion.
Thanks. We will assume that that is your
a little ritual.
So you might want to elbow me if there's a different answer. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. The 25% net operating loss credit levels the playing field between the producers and the small independents still in a development phase, whereas the producers can deduct their development costs from their taxable income. Those still in a development phase cannot. They have to become producers before they can take those deductions. So the net operating loss credit compensates for the discrepancy and helps get the development project off the ground by boosting project economics early on before revenues being generated. It's one of the ways that the state can really help support newcomers to the fields. While some developers have sufficient cash to make it through costly and risky development phase, others don't. Cutting the credit leaves them kind of in a lurch. It's not what we need, and the change, I think, it will particularly, the proposed change in Senate Bill 21 will particularly harm those seeking to develop costly oil and the more remote and challenged fields. In addition, the 15% interest rate proposed in Senate Bill 21 on the deferred net operating loss credits is too high, creating an unnecessary liability for Alaskans. It'll double in 5 years with 15% compounded interest rate applied. It would be the envy of any investor.
Thank you. Senator Gardner, any comments before we go to the administration for comments? And I want to note, I believe Bruce Tangeman, Tax Division Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue is on the line as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, this is Michael Pawlowski. This amendment is, again, on the net operating loss carry-forward credit. And I think it's important to distinguish between the benefit given to an investor by the net loss carry-forward versus the deductions available under progressivity. And if members remember the presentations by both Econ 1 and PFC to your committee, what you saw was that the current system for a new entrant is dramatically worse in terms of government take, internal rate of return, and net present value for a new entrant than it is for an incumbent producer. And the reason for that is really the deductibility around progressivity, the extra ability to buy down a tax rate. The net operating loss credit, which this amendment is talking about, mimics the base rate power that a spending by an incumbent has in the current system. So both an incumbent and a new entrant each have that 25% base tax rate. However, in that a new entrant doesn't have a tax rate yet, they don't get the same benefit of that deduction of the 25% because they don't have a tax liability. The net operating loss carryforward was created to create an equal playing ground for both the incumbent producer and the new entrant. The governor's treatment of the bill, as I spoke earlier, is to carry those credits forward and apply them when there is production and the state has the revenues from that production to pay for the credit obligation that's being created. To protect the new entrant, the interest or increase in the value of that credit of 15% was chosen because it's very similar to the cost of capital that we see and the consultants identified for the opportunity that that company would have had, as in the current system, the state just handed a check to them. And so the balance of that 15% number was done because no longer under the proposal is the state just writing a check for this credit, but rather requiring that they carry it forward against production. So there's an opportunity that the new entrant has lost in not receiving that direct payment that the state needed to compensate for. That was the rationale behind the 15% increase, which for upstream oil and gas activities, as far as the consultants have shown us, is fairly reasonable in terms of their other opportunities. What this amendment would do is fundamentally de-link the relationship of the proposal of taking credits against revenues and move it back to the cash payment. And the issue that Senator Gardner has identified is an important one. There are instances where the credit payment, direct cash payment from the state, is important to companies that don't have the access to capital to pursue the high-cost development challenges in Alaska. That's an important point that the administration looks forward to engaging with the committees on. However, for companies that do have the cash and the balance sheet to pursue a development, the improvement in the life cycle economics of SB 21 is really what drives the decision. So as the administration weighed the balance, the concern was seeing companies rely solely on the cash payments from the state to drive their development decisions rather than the economics of the project. And what the administration saw was important was to, instead of paying up front to subsidize the development and help have access to cash, to improve the overall economic viability of the project itself so that the natural forces in the marketplace can start to work.
I want to ask a question. I want to ask it fairly. And the reason I say fairly is I'm honestly curious about the effects of this. So would a company without the financial backing be likely to stem the decline of throughput as likely if we're subsidizing their operations on a regular basis? Would they be as likely to stem the decline as a company that has the pockets with the changes you're proposing?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to say that all companies that are investing in the state of Alaska and attempting to develop oil have an important role to play in the process. What we see that concerns the administration is there are small entrants who have found reasonable reserves of oil that have gone out to the private marketplace and tried to obtain capital for them. And because the life cycle economics, partly because of the tax system, are poor, they haven't been able to attract the capital. And so some of those companies turn to the state for financing or continue to work for capital. And the credit system today isn't overcoming that problem for those companies. And so what the administration looked really long and hard at with our consultants was improving the life cycle economics, the cash margins in the life of the project, is what actually frees up the economics for those companies to go get more financing. And so I think we believe, and with time the consultants will show, that by improving the life cycle economics of a project, you actually make it more likely that those small companies can play and participate in growing throughput in the pipeline. So I know that's a long answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, but all companies, the administration is concerned about how to make them successful in their efforts to explore and develop in Alaska. And we wouldn't want to pick winners and losers in the conversation.
Certainly, that answers my question. I guess to carry it one step further, the changes were primarily guarding against the check having a liability on, for a smaller company as opposed to enjoying the benefit, the revenue benefits of a company that's making it on their own, if you will.
And, Mr. Chairman, the, from the Department of Revenue's perspective, the point was to match up when the state was giving a benefit to when the state was receiving the revenues to pay for the benefit. Fundamentally, that was a big concern, especially as you look at the expansion of spending and more spending happening, that matching up those cash flows is really important for the long-term durability of the system.
Other questions or comments? Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Balash.
Mr. Chairman, this is Joe Balash again. I'd like to just emphasize one point in particular relative to the governor's four principles, and that is the second one, that incentives are geared to encouraging new production. We fundamentally see the credit system today as it operates, both through the QCE as well as the NOL system, as an incentive that rewards spending. And spending is a necessary part of getting to production, but it's not the direct link. And so our treatment of the NOL credit in providing the interest mechanism and then restricting its applicability to future production tax liabilities ensures that the company can only take advantage of that credit once they've gotten to the point of producing oil and paying quantities. And that fundamentally is where we're trying to reorient the incentives that we provide here.
Thank you, Mr. Balash. I also want to point out that we have carried that amendment suggestion as well to Senate Resources. It's the second bullet in the letter that we'll cover in a moment. It says evaluate removing the net operating loss provision in Senate Bill 21. And perhaps as they process that bill, there may be parts of that that make sense and fit into the overall amendments as we move forward. If there are no other comments, Nancy, please call the roll on amendment number two. Three. Sorry.
Yes.
No.
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 Amendment number three fails on a vote of one yea and four nays. Are there other amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move amendment number four.
Object.
Now, why would you do that? Okay, let's see. Give just a second here.
When any time you may need an at ease, please feel free. There's a lot of papers to shuffle here.
Okay. You know, one of the things we want to do with ACES, and I believe with Senate Bill 21, is provide a balance between encouraging investment and production and protecting the interests of the state, particularly, you know, if the bottom drops out. And what Amendment Number 6 does is it provides a minimum tax, an alternative minimum tax of 10% of the gross value at the point of production, so that if oil prices fall so much that, given our system of investments and credits and such, we're never completely out. It's applied after the 20% reduction Senate Bill 21 creates for new oil, the gross revenue exclusion. It specifies that producers may not apply tax credits to reduce their production taxes below the 10% floor. And the floor would apply only to fields that have already produced 1 billion barrels of oil and are still producing 100,000 barrels a day on average, essentially Prudhoe and Kuparik. The floor would kick in under $70 a barrel. Oil prices have been much lower than this in the past, so we believe there's grounds to actually put it in. And if the state takes less from profits, particularly at when oil prices are higher, we need to protect ourselves more at the lower end than we currently do. So that's the argument.
Senator Dunleavy?
Just for the record, this is Amendment 4, not 6, correct?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Other comments before we go to administration?
Mr. Chairman, again, this is Mike Pulowski with the Department of Revenue, and in considering this amendment, I think it's important to reach back to the governor's principles about balance. And there's been some discussion, not to wander too far from the amendment, about progressive versus regressive systems. And under the governor's proposal, the fairness is exactly what Senator Gardner has spoken to, in that at low prices, the state takes a higher share of the revenue. And that exists under SB 21 naturally because of the repeal of the credits and the combination of the fixed base rate that has not been reduced. What this amendment would do is move that regressivity by putting a 10% gross floor in, perhaps even higher than it would exist under the governor's current bill. So it would have the effect materially of taking a bill that is already slightly regressive and without modeling could make it potentially even more regressive.
Do you have a comment, Senator?
With a limited application to the two of the biggest fields in North America only.
Other questions or comments? Okay. Nancy, please call the roll on amendment number 4.
No.
Senator McGuire?
No.
Senator Gardner?
Yes.
Co-chair Lucchini?
No.
Co-chair Dalmeade?
No.
Amendment number 4 fails on a vote of 1 yea and 4 nays. Is there another amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to move amendment number 5. I'm going to withdraw it because I've sort of reconsidered how to do progressivity. I just, on the record, want to say that I think we need to, along with some other members of the committee who've already said the same, we need to retain progressivity. So I'm not going to offer amendment number 5.
Okay. Senator, would you, in our letter, the team did support, give me just a moment. In the philosophy section, if you will, evaluating employing progressivity as a tool to level the proportion of take for Alaskans across the various oil price environments. And I think we all agree that there may be a place to flatten the tax across those environments as well. With that, would you prefer that we eliminate the fourth bullet under the minority recommendations where it says consider bracketing progressivity at varying rates as the price of oil varies?
Thank you for the offer, Mr. Chair. What I would rather do is amend it and simply take out the word bracketing and at varying rates. So it would read consider progressivity as the price of oil varies. And actually, even that I would change. Its profits vary. We'll leave it. Consider progressivity as the price of oil varies.
You're okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other amendments? With no other amendments, administration, do you have any closing comments on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, no. Just thank you to the committee and the diligent work of the members and the good questions that were asked that pushed, I think, the departments though through a lot of work to try and answer. I think it's helped the administration a lot in refining the products that we are working on, and I appreciate the healthy and constructive dialogue that's taken place at this committee.
Well, Mr. Pulowski, I have a feeling that you're not finished on respectful dialogue and changes and a lot of processing as this bill moves through, but your departments have been extremely helpful, and we've learned a lot, have a lot to learn as we work through this. And again, Senator Gardner, I just want to remind you that we are carrying that forward, and a lot of your thoughts are creative, constructive, and we were, again, staying with the guiding tenets of the committee, but I believe they will be processed as they go forward. So I don't know that there's not limited support for some of your suggestions, and I appreciate you working collaboratively with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is the best time to say this, but I do want to say I appreciate your efforts throughout this process to keep it open and to get answers to the questions that we have. I did get answers to my questions from the Department of Revenue. It's 11 pages I got this afternoon. And so I haven't even read it entirely, and I wish I'd had time to, because there are some elements here that I'd like to put on the record if this is appropriate time, because they relate to the letter of intent that we're discussing at this point. If that was okay with you, Mr. Chair. Item number 7, which is on the third page, talks about, and if I might just read it, the higher IRR, internal rates of return, for ACES incumbents result entirely from the buy-down effect. Additional investment under ACES allows an incumbent to buy down its tax rate on existing production. Under ACES system, a producer can earn those higher IRRs, but only if it reinvests in Alaska to buy down its tax rate. It cannot earn those returns if it chooses to distribute its profit to shareholders. And I'll just stop there, because this is exactly what we wanted.
Senator, where are you?
I'm on page 3 of this, page 3, and it's slide 7.
Okay.
And that's, I just want to point out that, you know, what we're trying to do is a carrot and a stick both. And the carrot is you buy, with progressivity, you buy down your, yes.
I'm sorry, just so that everyone can get on the same page. It is page 3, it's number 7, and it was referring to slide 47 through 52. So that's why I was having trouble finding where
Thank
you were
you.
At.
Thank
Sorry.
You. Sorry. Okay.
Thank you,
Sarah. Like I said, I'm a little frazzled. I haven't read through it all even. But this caught my eye about how the additional investment under ACES allows a company to buy down its existing tax rate on production. Under ACES, a producer earns those high IRRs only if it reinvests in Alaska to buy down its rate. And that is exactly what we wanted to do, encourage people to take their profits, buy down their tax rate by investing in Alaska. And Senate Bill 21 lacks this element in its current structure, I believe. Another important...
Mr. Pawlowski, let's give the administration who constructed the current version the opportunity to respond.
Mr. Chairman, thank you again for the record. This is Michael Pawlowski. The questions were extremely detailed from Senator Gardner, and that was important. I point out that some of these questions were specific to the administration's consultant, Econ 1, mm-hmm. to the exact slide to which Senator Fairclough referenced, and the consultant's opinion continues in that sentence, which members can read, to talk about, in this sense, the profits and associated higher IRRs are somewhat captive and may not be viewed as being of the same quality to profits earned in other jurisdictions where no such strings are attached. I think the administration looks forward to talking through the efficiency of the incentives and understands fully the carrot and stick approach, but in future committees look thoroughly forward to engaging in that dialogue with the legislature and the public about exactly how that carrot and stick approach works.
Well, I think it's important to continue as well with the entire answer, because below it does cover the fact that, in short, IRR is one factor but should not be viewed in isolation. IRR calculations that vary greatly from most other opportunities should probably be taken with a grain of salt. I mean, it's one indicator. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might, so that the general public can actually follow along, consider this for inclusion into the record so that the full answers instead of excerpts can be available to the general public. So if we could have the clerk, if we provide the clerk a copy of that, then we can upload it so that the general public can see all of the answers in their entirety. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I do want to express our appreciation for the administration. I know everyone's working very hard, and I know you had many, many hours in getting with the consultant, getting these answers covered well. So very much appreciated. Another item, Senator?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I I haven't had a chance to really study and reflect and consider how I might want to change it. I can't sign on to this as it is right now. I know that. I'm not ready to. I don't object to you moving it forward. I'm fine with that. I'll just vote against moving it forward.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that.
Mr. Chairman.
What is the pleasure of the committee?
Is there an opportunity to make brief comments from committee members?
Of course there is. I don't know if you want to do that as after we move or before, but you can. It's at your convenience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the complexity of the tax structure that both industry and the administration face every day, and believe in the principles that the governor has brought forward. But I wanted to make sure that I stated clearly that I believe Alaska is not competitive for a variety of reasons, and that we do need to make some changes to make sure that industry can flourish in the state of Alaska, and that Alaskans can have confidence in their tax system to know that it is in place to benefit all Alaskans, and that we do that as bicameral and bipartisan in our efforts to make sure Alaskans' future is secure. And that I believe that there is a correlation that has been spoken to between a regressive nature when you remove progressivity of the tax structure, and I'm listening. But I want I want Alaskans to share in the benefit as the price moves up. And this committee has not been able to see how the current credits that are being proposed to move, either being expanded or excluded, how that will actually affect the bottom line. So I look forward to that future discussion. And I look forward to the administration making its argument why simplicity may be better than progressivity from your perspective as an administration. But that said, I don't want the record to say that I am all in on progressivity, because the rate that we're climbing right now is way too high, that on the high end we take more than almost any other jurisdiction, certainly in America. I'm trying to understand on behalf of the people that sent me to Juneau to represent them the consequences and the intrigues that might exist so that we can continue to bring new explorers into Alaska, as well as make sure that our legacy fields can produce at the highest rate level, because that's where new oil can come from most expeditiously for Alaskans, is if it comes from those legacy fields. And I know everyone may not agree with that particular point, but I believe, Senator, Mr. Chairman, that may have been what you were referring to in a question that you asked the administration. Do new small producers or explorers bring something quicker to the table in the form of oil to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, or is it the legacy fields that might win the race on behalf of Alaskans and the things that oil provides for our state? So I just want Alaskans to know that, Senator Michiki, I support what you've done. The committee is moving forward a letter of intent versus moving individual knobs that the tax structure in its entirety can affect throughput, but this committee doesn't have a specific, at least to date, on how we could make an amendment that would be the silver bullet to increase production. So I appreciate the letter of intent. I appreciate including all positions that were offered at the table. In the future, I hope that if there are amendments available, that we might see them earlier. I know that we've spent 3 weeks here, so I appreciate that the chairman is doing his due diligence to make sure all Alaskans are heard, and that this is moving slowly through the process, that it's not being expedited or somehow not having all of the light shined on it for Alaskans. With that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your leadership, and I appreciate Senator Gardner offering highlights for consideration in future committees, as well as for the tax structure in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Fairclough. And just want to remind the public that this is not an oil tax committee. I know I've said it many times, but there's a reason we're not delving into those knobs. that are controlling the tax rate. We have committees that will be looking at that specifically. Our lens was specifically on throughput. Other comments? Senator Dunleavy.
Just briefly, obviously this has been a very enlightening experience, taking a look at SB 21, but also taking a look at ACES. And for me, more importantly, taking a look at Alaska and where Alaska is and where Alaska wants to go. You know, we may be, hopefully not, but we may be at what they refer to as the end of the golden age of oil in Alaska. We hope not, and I think everybody on this committee hopes not. So what we're trying to do is find a way to continue the production and obviously the revenue for Alaska. But as I mentioned in one of the press conferences, this process has been one of also turning over stones. And a number of stones that we've turned over, again, will continue to be discussed in the next committees. But we also have to take a look at, although this particular topic may be focused on oil, it's going to probably morph into a larger discussion about business in Alaska, about investment in Alaska. And for some of us, or many of us, more importantly, our own spending policies in Alaska, our own fiscal policies in Alaska. There have been many folks watching this these committee hearings. And of course, once again, we're focused on oil. But I've had conversations with folks in other industries that aren't oil producers that are watching what takes place here. And the long and short of it is we may be talking about oil, but I think more importantly, we're talking about Alaska's future. And whether we are going to be a destination for investment, whether we're going to be a destination for job growth, and whether we're going to fulfill, in many respects, what was the original purpose of Alaska being purchased by the United States, to be a warehouse and a terrific place to live, the modern version as well, for the rest of the world, we're going to have some deep discussions as to where we're going to go for the future. So fiscal policy, spending policy, and a lot of peripheral issues surrounding those are going to be discussed in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. What is the pleasure of the committee? It's your turn.
I move we pass SB 21 version 28GS1647/A.1 from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
That's coming.
I object.
Thank you, Senator Gardner. Would you like to speak to your objection?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Is your objection maintained?
Yes.
Thank you. Nancy, please call the roll on moving Senate Bill version A, 21 version A, and for the record, as Senator Dunleavy stated, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Senator Fairclough.
Yes.
Senator McGuire.
Yes.
Senator Gardner.
No.
Co-Chair Dunleavy.
Yes.
Co-Chair Machiki.
Yes. Passing Senate Bill 21, version A, passes 4 yeas to 1 nay. We also have a letter of intent. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass the accompanying letter of intent.
Thank you. Any objection? No objection. I'm, for the record, going to read the letter of intent. Senate Special Committee on Trans-Alaska Pipeline System Throughput was formed specifically to evaluate solutions designed to reverse or significantly reduce the historical decline in the quantity of oil produced from leases or properties north of 68 degrees north latitude and shipped to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. The committee recognizes that oil revenue is extremely important to the state of Alaska and currently funding over 90% of Alaska's essential services and critical infrastructure, including education, public safety, health, social services, and transportation. The committee is also aware that projected declines in the TAP system throughput may compound the operational and cost issues that could jeopardize the viability and safe operation of the system. The committee was the first to consider Senate Bill 21. We held six meetings with the intent of framing the discussion around SB 21 through a lens of evaluating direct impacts to the TAP's production decline. Committee process was designed for fairness and equal participation by both majority and minority members. Committee included expert consultant agency, the Alaska Public, and industrial testimony in the process through many productive hours and publicly available meetings evaluating the potential positive and negative effects on production through revised Alaska oil tax policy. Most importantly, the committee provided over 5 hours of committee time for public testimony from every LIO in the state, as well as telephonically from any location. Every Alaskan that chose to address the committee was warmly welcomed and given the opportunity to share their support and or concerns. The committee arrived at several key findings after completing the process of evaluating SB 21 and the effects of oil tax on production. Those key findings include regarding oil revenue that funds the vast majority of governmental functions for the people of Alaska, there are many factors in which the state has little control, including the price of North Slope oil. Total government take through oil taxation is the only lever under the control of the people of Alaska. The ACES tax structure has likely contributed to advancing the decline of oil production and throughput in TAPS, primarily due to the lack of competitiveness with other OECD producing regions. When evaluating, When evaluating with increased production as a primary objective, ACES credits should have been more specifically directed toward projects resulting in production and less toward general spending. Specific incentives and competitive oil tax regime in Alaska will likely result in additional production-related spending. There's been a direct correlation in other OEDC producing regions between production-related spending and increased production. Current fiscal spending policies appear to have an adverse effect on the business climate and willingness to invest in the state of Alaska. Policies must deliver the clear message to the business community that Alaska will not continue taxing to fund unsustainable levels of government spending. And although SB 21 is an adequate platform from which a respectful dialogue can begin, in the current form, the bill may not adequately provide production incentives and opportunities, a level revenue proportion for Alaskans, and protections for Alaska hire and reinvestment. The committee's intent to pass the bill to Senate resources in the original form for further processing is in no way an expression of support by committee members for Senate Bill 21 in its current form. In fact, most members have expressed concern for key concepts that would require revision prior to supporting the bill as it moves through the legislative process. Key concerns being passed through this letter with an expectation of consideration moving forward will be communicated in two sections. The first section below indicates throughput-related committee recommendations. First is evaluating providing a guarantee of investment in Alaska and a further incentive for stemming production decline from leases or properties north of 68 degrees north latitude by fixing the amount of production used in determining the reasonable transportation costs to determine transportation deduction costs for pipelines and gas treatment plants under the oil and gas production tax and oil surcharge so that producers receive a benefit for increased oil production and throughput in the line but incur a corresponding limitation on deductions after December 31st, 2015. Evaluate expanding the application of the gross revenue exclusion in units formed before 2003, legacy areas. Senate Resources Committee should also specifically inquire about expansions of existing participating areas, increasing recovery factors in existing participating areas, and participating areas that contain oil with an API gravity of 20 degrees or less. Evaluate specific production-related credits allowed under ACES for inclusion in Senate Bill 21 as a direct incentive for costs that deliver production. Require that credits are charged against actual production to eliminate currently existing negative revenue liability to the state. Then there's a section of philosophies. The committee is united in several philosophies that are also recommendations to be considered in Senate Bill 21, not related to throughput, but including firm incentives for Alaska hire and Alaska purchase. I know Senator Dunleavy and I are very interested, and the senator has begun an effort on evaluating a program for incentivizing Alaska hire and Alaska purchase. evaluating significant and specific incentives for unconventional and heavy oil, evaluating a production credit system for producers willing to provide propane fuels for the people of rural Alaska and areas unlikely to receive natural gas distribution if and when a natural gas pipeline is constructed, and evaluating employing progressivity as a tool to level the proportion of take for Alaskans across the various oil price environments. Although not supported unanimously by the committee, yet in the spirit of fairness for all committee members, the minority committee member has requested the following considerations to be passed on to the Senate Resource Committee. Evaluate a time limit into the future for the 20% gross revenue exclusion. Evaluate removing the net operating loss provision in SB 21. Evaluate adding a 10% minimum gross tax at the gross value at point of production, and consider progressivity as the price of oil varies. The Senate Special Committee on Trans-Alaska Pipeline System Throughput will continue to convene to identify and evaluate additional mitigation solutions for operational and regulatory TAPS production-related obstacles in the future. The committee looks forward to the constructive dialogue and additional processing that will occur within the legislature related to Senate Bill 21 the remainder of this session. This letter will be respectfully submitted to the Senate Resources Committee on February 7, 2013. With that, could we please, if there is no additional comment, could we please vote on the accompanying letter of intent, please?
Objection.
Representative Fairclough?
Yes.
Representative
McGuire?
Yes.
Representative
Gardner? No. Yes. So with a vote of
4 yeas, 1 nay.
With a vote of 4 yeas and 1 nay, the letter of intent is passed from committee. So Senate Bill 21 has passed from committee. Again, we talked about the fact that all of us see room for adjustment and improvement as it moves through the process. It passes with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and the accompanying letter of intent. And if committee members could please not leave the room until you've signed the committee report, I want to thank all committee members, the administration, and staff that has worked hard on processing this bill through TAPS throughput. And are there any additional comments from committee members? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think you've done a really fine job on this committee, and I know it's something that you had mixed feelings about for this particular legislation, and I very much appreciate that. I want to tell you that my vote against the letter of intent really is because I haven't had a chance to study it. I don't feel comfortable with the content, and I wasn't prepared yet to amend it to make it something that I could fully support, but the principle of sending the letter and the effort you've gone to is something that I appreciate and support.
Thank you very much, Senator Gardner. I think we're supposed to wait until we've signed the committee report. No, we're not supposed to wait. Do you have a comment? No. Just as we close this, I mean, the most important thing that I think we've accomplished is we've begun a dialogue on a bill that's going to get thousands of hours of processing and a lot of hard work with not only legislators but staff and obviously the administration. But none of it would be possible about understanding directions where we should go without the many hours of public comment that we receive. So we do want to thank the public. We hope they'll stay engaged. I have a feeling they will. And we look forward to moving this forward. So with that, I'd like to adjourn this meeting at 4:35.